portrayals in the newspapers and in the media is that the governor has saved $268 million. It just hasn't happened.
State lawmakers question Governor Palin's budget numbers. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 4th of February. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Senator Lisa Murkowski wants the stimulus package cut back.
It is something that has truly something in it for everyone, whether it's needed or not. And that's not what this country needs right now.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Alaska Engineering News Fund, whose contributors include Dowell HKM, providing civil and transportation engineering, land surveying, and planning services, on the web at dowellhkm.com. And by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
The switch to digital television will be delayed. The U.S. House voted today to postpone the date on when TV broadcasters must switch off their regular analog signals and go digital.
The yeas are 264, the nays are 158, with zero having voted present. S-352 passes.
The digital switch deadline has long been February 17th, but now viewers will have an extra 4 months until June 12th. The bill still needs the president's signature, but President Obama supports it. The federal government has spent millions of dollars educating viewers about the switch, but ran out of discount coupons for digital converter boxes last year. There's now a waiting list of more than 3 million people signed up to get the coupons. In order to receive digital signals, viewers need either the converter box, cable, or satellite service, or a new television. A recent Nielsen report estimated 6 million households aren't ready, especially rural, poor, disabled, and elderly viewers. In Alaska, the rural television system ARCS is not being affected by the digital conversion, nor are those viewers who receive their signal from a translator as they do on the Kenai Peninsula. Alaska Republican Congressman Don Young voted against the digital TV delay today. He said the whole reason for the switch is to give public safety officials access to the old analog channels, and they shouldn't have to wait. Young did vote for an amendment that would have allowed public safety groups who have purchased analog spectrum to access it this month. In the Senate, the vote was unanimous to postpone the digital switch, with Alaska Republican Lisa Murkowski and Democrat Mark Begich voting for it. The House initially took up the bill last week and tried to fast-track it, but failed. Today's vote was its second and passed mostly along party lines, with Democrats voting in favor of it. 8,700 jobs, that's what the economic stimulus package could mean for Alaska, according to the White House. A study released this week shows Alaska gaining those jobs over the next 2 years. Dan Robinson is an economist with the State Labor Department's Research and Analysis section. He says that represents about one-third of the number of people who are currently unemployed in the state. He says he would expect some of those would be filled by people immigrating to the state to find work.
If there are jobs that Alaskans are waiting and skilled and, you know, prepared to take, then that works out well. But quite often, we have to reach out to other states. That's not ideal, and the state does all it can to train people in state so that they can get the stimulus. I'm sure that would be the focus for the stimulus package to reduce that, and certainly the state's goal.
Robinson says in recent years, the state has gained an average of between 3,000 to 5,000 jobs each year. Senator Mark Begich supports the stimulus plan and says for Alaska, it could mean more than $132 million in highway funding, another $20 million for drinking water projects, and more than $11 million for the Weatherization Assistance Program. Begich is co-sponsoring some amendments this week, including one that would require states to certify that funds are being used to create jobs or improve the economy. The stimulus package has received criticism for having too much pork, that is, money for extraneous projects. Begich spokeswoman Julie Haskett says his amendment would ensure money isn't wasted.
It's another layer of transparency and accountability to say to the states that they're acknowledging the money is coming and that they're going to make sure it's spent the way it's supposed to be spent. We've heard some talk from Governor Palin that this economic recovery package is too much, or perhaps we don't need it. So this would be an opportunity, if the state decides to reject the economic recovery money, for them to do so.
Haskett says Senator Begich does hope the state and local communities take any money that's offered through the economic assistance package if they need it. Governor Sarah Palin and leaders of other rural states voiced concerns that the transportation funding formula would favor urban areas. However, Senator Lisa Murkowski says that's been resolved.
After about 3 different days' consult with the Department of Transportation up north, it appears that our reading on that was inaccurate and that they're going to be okay for the transit funding.
Murkowski says overall the transportation provisions for Alaska aren't bad, but she is disappointed that there isn't anything in the legislation to assist with ports. Even as her office works to improve the stimulus package, Murkowski says at this point she is not supportive of the bill as it now stands.
It is something that has truly something in it for everyone, whether it's needed or not. And that's not what this country needs right now. We need a targeted approach to stimulate the economy, to create jobs, to deal with one of the root causes of the problem, which is housing and what has happened within our lending sector. And we don't need extraneous stuff.
Murkowski has criticized things like educational Pell Grants as being out of place in a bill that's supposed to spur economic growth. But President Obama's National Economic Council Director Larry Summers says educational grants will help keep families afloat.
I see families who don't have to sell their houses to send their kids to college. I see families who don't have to cut back on other spending to send their kids to college. So I think many of the things that people say aren't stimulative. Well, I would agree that they are valuable in the long run, but it does seem to me that when you're injecting funds into the economy and enabling greater expenditures than would otherwise take place, you really are doing a great deal to stimulate spending.
Summers says the president believes the projects in the stimulus package will put millions of Americans to work and improve the country's infrastructure. Summers says it's the largest investment in the backbone of America's economy since interstate highways were built.
If all you cared about was hiring as many people as you possibly could, you could probably hire more people to dig holes and then fill them in, but that would seem awfully wasteful. And so our approach is to try to focus both on jobs for those who need them and on work that needs to be done. I think we've struck a good balance. No doubt it's a balance that could be improved on, and that's why we're open to discussions.
But time for discussions is running out. Senate Democrats want to pass their bill this week, and that's a concern for Senator Murkowski. She says time is needed to hear from the experts who are warning that the country has never been in this situation before.
It speaks to the crisis that we're facing. It speaks to the need to do something, but it also speaks to the need to try to get it right so that we're being effective with our use of dollars rather than just saying, well, we put a lot of money towards it, but we haven't seen the results yet.
The Senate is continuing to go through amendments on the floor. If Democrats want to see the stimulus package passed, they'll have to win over some Republican support. The Palin administration faced its first challenges today to the supplemental budget the governor introduced earlier this week. The supplemental budget makes changes to the current year's spending, and usually it increases spending to cover unforeseen needs. But this one asks for $268 million in reductions. The largest item in the plan removes money for tax credits to small oil and gas exploration companies. The amount has not been requested, and the administration believes it will not be needed. Senate Finance Co-Chair Bert Stedman questioned whether that money should be considered as savings.
If there's truly a decline in the demand for that capital credit being put to the Treasury at the end of the year, wouldn't the $200 million never, it's just an authority, it would never be put to the Treasury, and at the end of the year when you do your books, it's gone anyway?
Calling it a question of timing, Director of Management and Budget Karen Rehfeld says the payments would likely be made in a future year's budget. Stedman also challenged the governor's budget claim that she saved $50 million that had been set aside last year in case of unexpected adjustments. Stedman said he couldn't even find the money in last year's budget. Rehfeld said it was not part of the formal budget, but it was included in the fiscal summary put out by her office and the Legislative Finance Office and is used for comparisons to previous and future budgets.
Again, it's very clear on your fiscal summaries. It's been treated that way. We have a placeholder for operating capital and even fiscal notes that may or may not be approved by you during the session. The idea is to give you as complete a package as we can at the beginning of the process, and then we adjust from there.
Stedman asked Rehfeld if ignoring those two items alone would create a different slant on the plan.
And, you know, we look at the total here is what we're concerned about, of course. So we net those two out. Is this really not about an $18 million difference on the Treasury?
Bethel's Lyman Hoffman said the expenses could still arise and are not savings. And Juneau Democrat Kim Elton said the understanding of how the governor got to that total needs to be cleared up. He says the public is getting confused.
People who are getting in touch with me and the portrayals in the newspapers and in the media is that the governor has saved $268 million. It just hasn't happened.
Rehfeld said that she was presenting a complete listing and package of the changes that are needed before the end of the fiscal year, and those challenged items are accurate. Elton disagreed.
If we're not going to spend the $200 million, which the Department of Revenue has suggested that we would not be spending in the current fiscal year, it will reduce the amount that we're spending. So, I mean, I think that it's just part of the way that we talk about that.
I don't disagree with that, but you have to add on that if we don't spend it this year, we'll be spending it next year. Therefore, there is no savings to the Treasury.
In the first appearance of the adjustments, legislators did not ask about the vague, unspecified cuts the administration wants to make, although they have expressed concern. Future hearings on the bill have not yet been scheduled. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a state lawmaker's email address is used for a scam.
Somebody had hacked their way into it and sent an email out to folks.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Grant Station, now offering several webinars each month. More information at grantstation.com. And by Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve.
Last night, Alaska state troopers shot and killed a woman whom they say was wielding a handgun. Troopers say 38-year-old Deborah Torrey was shot after refusing to drop the gun. Authorities say they took a call saying that a woman had fired a handgun inside a medical facility. The caller then said the same woman was outside the center trying to re-enter with the handgun. Troopers say they told her to drop the gun, but she refused repeatedly and made threatening statements and motions. In response, two troopers fired their weapons, killing Torrey. She died at the scene. Department policy requires the troopers involved in a shooting to be placed on administrative leave. Once they return, the department will release their names. A University of Alaska Fairbanks student was found dead in her dorm room yesterday. Campus police are investigating the death of 20-year-old Lauren LeCompte of Fairbanks. UAF Police Chief Sean McGee says officers went looking for her at the request of one of her parents who lives out of state.
Yesterday we got a call from the student's father, and he had asked that we check on her, establish her welfare. He hadn't heard from her in some time. When we went and checked on her, we found, unfortunately, that she was deceased.
McGee says the cause of LeCompte's death is uncertain at this time, but he says there were no obvious signs of suicide or foul play.
We didn't find anything that would indicate anything other than unknown causes at this time.
Chief McGee would not comment on whether LeCompte had any health problems that could have contributed to her death. He says an autopsy will be performed by the state medical examiner to determine a cause of death. LeCompte was a resident assistant in McIntosh Hall. UAF Office of Residence Life staff met with dorm residents last night. Counselors are being made available. Recently, Kotzebue Representative Reggie Jewell found out that anyone can become a target of internet scams, no matter where you live or who you are. For Member Station KBRW, Janelle Everett has the story.
In December, a phony email was sent out asking for money. The email was allegedly from House District 40 Representative Reggie Jewell. Jewell says he was surprised that someone had gotten into his email account.
Because that was not a bogus thing. That was somebody didn't create an account with my name on it. That was actually my real account. And somebody had hacked their way into it and sent an email out to folks. Somebody forwarded the message of what it contained and indicated that I was somewhere in Europe and was stuck, and somebody stole my credit cards, and can people send me money to make my way home?
In the phony email, the sender asks for a soft loan of £2,350, or the equivalent of $4,700, to pay the hotel bill and get home from London, where he was stranded. Representative Jewell says his personal computer will have to be checked to ensure his information remains private. He says, so far, neither his personal or financial information seems to have been compromised by the scam.
I've been trying to close down the email account. Part of the problem is I can't get in to do to the email thing. And my personal computer, I've got to bring it in to somebody to see if that's the IP account that was used to create the email address.
Jewell says once his passwords were changed by the hacker, it was difficult for him to access his account. Jewell says the internet is a good thing, but it has its drawbacks.
It's been quiet for a while, and hopefully will stay that way. But it's real. This new technology is a wonderful thing, but it does have its drawbacks and its risks.
How the scammer got Representative Jewell's name remains a mystery. But the recipient of the email forwarded it to Pam Varney, who runs the Legislative Affairs Office in Juneau. Varney says it is unfortunate that the representative's name and personal email account were used as part of a scam. Many Alaskans use the internet daily to pay bills as well as make purchases. Tara Sims, Alaska Public Relations Manager for the Better Business Bureau, reminds residents to protect their information.
Anything that looks suspicious, you can send to them, and they'll do an investigation on that. A great tip is if it's an unsolicited email coming to you, don't open it. Don't click on it. Don't do anything with it. But if it looks suspicious at all, don't open it. And definitely don't open any attachments or click on any links if you did open the email.
Sims says citizens should do everything possible to protect information from would-be thieves. Reporting from Barrow, I'm Janelle Everett.
As income tax season approaches, the Better Business Bureau is also warning citizens to be wary of callers claiming to be from the IRS. For Member Station KSDP in Sandpoint, Kels Hetherington reports.
Alaskans preparing their annual tax returns could fall victim to a scam, warns the Better Business Bureau in Anchorage.
Emails and phone calls where the scammers pretend to be IRS agents or tax preparers, but in reality they're con artists just trying to swipe people's personal information.
BBB spokeswoman Tara Sims says the IRS will never ask you for your bank or social security numbers. They already have those, she says. Sims explains how some of these scams may work.
A lot of times it's in the form of a check fraud. Basically, they'll say, in those examples, it's a lottery, saying you won some sort of sweepstakes, and they'll send the IRS the tax money. In reality, you file that information with your tax information, which is due on April 15th. But they'll say, oh, we'll send that to the IRS for you, and they'll end up getting that money from you and then not send it.
While there's no telling who may be targeted by any of these awful tax season scams, there are ways to protect yourself.
Making sure that you check your credit report. By law, you can get an annual free credit report. Another thing is to check your financial statements, your bank account, your credit card statements. If there's anything that seems odd, contact your credit card or bank.
Sims also says that the IRS never sends emails to you if you have not been contacted before, and advises people who believe they've been the target of a scam to contact authorities and file a police report. Kels Hetherington, KSDP, Sandpoint.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Alaska Giving Coalition announces Pick, Click, Give, a whole new way to reach out and help Alaskans when you apply for your PFD online. Share part of your dividend with some of your favorite Alaska nonprofits. It's a chance for all of us to come together and give a little extra. Remember, when you apply for your PFD online, just Pick, Click, Give. Information online at pickclickgive.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Giving Coalition.
Alaska's tourism industry wants the state to spend more money on marketing. It's pitching a plan to use cruise line taxes to boost visitor numbers that are declining due to the economy. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
This is not the best time to be making your money off of tourists.
Our potential visitors are essentially keeping their money in their pocket or in their savings accounts because of the concern over the economy.
That's Alaska Travel Industry Association President Ron Peck. He says the number of tourists has been flat for about 2 years, stuck at about 1 million cruise ship passengers and about 700,000 other travelers. But Peck says bookings for the upcoming season are down.
Our visitors are either reluctant to make the buy or they're not making the purchase. And we are hearing from large and small businesses alike, hotels, bed and breakfasts, tour operators, and cruise lines, that this season could be very, very challenging.
The association already gets close to $12 million a year from the state for Alaska's official tourism marketing effort. But Peck says it needs closer to $20 million to make a dent, especially in the current economy. ATIA wants to tap into cruise lines' corporate income tax payments. The tax was mandated by the Cruise Ship Initiative, passed by voters in 2006.
That's new funding deriving from the visitor industry. So we're suggesting that essentially cruise lines be allowed to make a contribution to ATIA's marketing efforts and be given a tax credit towards that corporate cruise income tax.
Peck says several lawmakers have told him they might introduce a tax credit bill, but so far that hasn't happened. And if it does, there will be opposition.
Frankly, I think a lot of people, including me, think that there should be increased marketing efforts of tourism. But the specific proposal that's on the table is bad for a lot of reasons.
Joe Geldof campaigned for the initiative that applied the state's tax to cruise lines. He says the association's proposal would not allow for public scrutiny.
It's a tax credit that's not done in an open manner. And frankly, Alaskans don't know what they're getting for the credit. So if you're going to increase marketing, then let's do it out in the open and let's know what we're getting instead of just leaving it to people who don't even live in the state and may not have the state's best interest or may not do it in a coordinated manner.
He'd rather see more tourism marketing money in the operating budget, which could be tracked. State officials don't have a total for what the tax brings in. They say that's because it's mixed in with other corporate income, but they say they would come up with a figure if a bill is introduced. Any additional funding would not come in time to help this year's season. The Travel Association has already begun a campaign to boost those bookings. One part uses the theme Hottest Deals from the Coolest State. It includes cruises discounted as much as 50%. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Southeast's commercial Dungeness crab fishery will look a little different this year following decisions by the state's Board of Fish in January. The board approved a change to the season timing for districts 1 and 2 in southern Southeast near Ketchikan. From Petersburg, KFSK's Joe Vicnicki reports.
While most of the region normally enjoys a two-month summer season and a two-month fall season, districts 1 and 2 have been on a single season that runs from October through February. Petersburg crabber Ryan Littleton submitted the proposal seeking to bring districts 1 and 2 in line with the rest of the region. The change is meant to spread the Southeast fleet over a larger area. Crabbers say the fleet is becoming more concentrated, and they've been losing Dungeness grounds due to increasing predation from a growing sea otter population, along with closure of small areas around the region for personal use fishing. The need to open the southern areas in the summer was a sentiment echoed by Petersburg crabber Mark Jensen during public testimony before the board.
I think it's a good marketing time for the crab, better weather conditions, and I just think it would be a benefit to giving more room to the crab fleet to spread out.
Southeast summer season is one of only a few commercial Dungy summertime fisheries on the West Coast, and that improves the value of the Southeast catch. However, the change was opposed by the Ketchikan Advisory Committee and by Department of Fish and Game staff. Marine Fisheries Supervisor Kyle Hebert said Fish and Game was concerned with crabbers catching Dungeness with soft shells during the summer mating season.
The information that we have regarding the molt timing and the incidence of soft shell and the mortality rates from handling soft shell crab suggests that to limit that handling mortality, the appropriate time for the fishery is in the fall, when not a soft shell crab issue.
The summertime fishery in Districts 1 and 2 was initially closed in the mid-1980s so that permit holders in that part of the region could target other fish during the summertime and save Dungy crabbing for the fall and winter. Board members at the meeting in Petersburg in January were swayed by input from the commercial fleet and the public. Carl Johnstone of Anchorage said he changed his mind on the proposal.
As I hear more and more information, I tend to put credit in the users who are reporting that, and I'm inclined to change my mind on this. I think given the lack of information and the data we have from the in-fishery people and the market conditions, the time of year, that it's something that we should consider adopting.
The board initially voted down that change, but then reconsidered it and approved an amended version of the proposal. It passed with a 3-year sunset clause, which will force the board to readdress the issue during the next Southeast Shellfish meeting cycle. In other commercial Dungeness proposals, the board voted 7-0 against a shift in season dates for the overall Southeast fishery. That proposal sought a single season starting July 1st and running through November 1st. The board did support a proposal that will allow Fish and Game to take softshell crab into consideration when it determines the length of the fall Dungy season. The change will give the department flexibility to account for softshell in calculating the early season catch, and it's that calculation which helps determine the length of the seasons and whether the fall fishery opens. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We'd love to hear your comments about the show. To send us your thoughts, go to APRN.org, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and click on the Contact Us link. Be sure to tell us if we can use your comments on the air, and if so, how to pronounce your name. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Janelle Everett in Barrow, Kels Hetherington in Sandpoint, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Joe Vicnicki in Petersburg. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Duncan Moon is our vice president for media production. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP. Giving back to the community is a priority because so many at BP call Alaska home.
And by
the University of Alaska Fairbanks now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.